Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Solo Spotlight. I'm your host, Ryan McDougall. And my guest today, Colin Reed, a first-time candidate running for council in Ward 7 in Strathcona County, Alberta. We talk about what this campaign has taught him, the leadership qualities he believes makes him a fit for the role, and how he hopes to bridge the gap between everyday residents and the people making the decisions. It's a conversation about values, listening, and what it means to be there for your community. We're also going to get an honest look at someone stepping into the political spotlight for the very first time. And if you enjoy this episode, make sure to follow, subscribe, and share it with a friend who cares about where our communities are heading. Now, let's get into my conversation with Colin Reed. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Solo Spotlight. Here with a good friend of mine, Colin Reed, who's running for Ward 7 in Strathcona County. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you, Ryan?
Good. Thank you for coming on the show. I'm really grateful to have this conversation with you. I think this is going to be good for you to have a little bit more of a platform to talk about some of these issues that we're talking about in the ward, as well as your techniques for running and your experience through the campaign, and just for people to get to know you a little more.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's great to be here.
Yeah. Let's get started with the basics. For people that don't know you, who are you and why are you running for Ward 7?
So my name is Colin Reed. I have been living in Strathcona County for 20 years now. I have been heavily involved in the community for most of that time. My career has worn a lot of different hats. I was in the military for 10 years. I ran my own business for 13 years. And now I'm in law enforcement. And I've always been a person that's dedicated to my family, dedicated to service. I like to know all my neighbors and get involved in the school, get involved in the community. And this felt like the best way to do that. So Ward 7 of Strathcona County is where I'm now living on an acreage with my family. And what better way to get involved and to help serve than being local government?
Mm-hmm. And you already had a leg up based on like your own personal traits and stuff. You were able to just get out there and know everybody. So then when you made the decision to run, it was kind of like, oh, yeah, this isn't easy.
No, I was, before I decided to run, I was coaching basketball. I was heavily involved in the community and just kind of fell on my lap that the election was coming up when it did. And it gave me a great opportunity to start researching it and moving into that kind of career.
How was that decision process like? Was it a longer process for you in terms of thinking about it and then making the decision? Or was it pretty quick that you decided, yeah, I'm going to run?
So just a little personal background, I guess. This is something I've always wanted to do. It's been a dream of mine, if you'd like to say that, since I was a younger man. And I've always been interested in politics and government and things like that. So it was, when I kind of put those two pieces together, it was an easy decision.
And when you talk about being a leader in the community, what does that leadership look like on a day-to-day basis? So you already kind of talked about it, of getting out there, communicating, being involved in events, but on like a personal level, or like as what you're showing, what kind of skills would that be?
Well, it's kind of being a man about town, if you want to use that that euphemism. It's just talking to people. You're at the arenas, you're at the fields already with your kids as they're playing sports, as most people my age are. And it's introducing yourself. It's being out there with people. My personality is kind of like that anyway. So it was just a natural connection when that started to happen. And in my mind, I was driven towards that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even knowing you for how long I know you, when you decided to do this, it was kind of like, oh yeah, that makes total sense. What do you think, besides living there and understanding the community, what other reasons do you think you're a good fit to represent Ward 7?
Well, knowing all the people really helps. And having the demographic changing the way it is, all the people that we see every day, all the people at the school, as I'm walking around campaigning and hitting all the doors, I keep getting people saying, hey, don't you coach this, or haven't you been here? And we all know each other out there anyway, so by 6 degrees of separation. So when I'm going around and when I'm talking to people, it's more like talking to your friends. It's more like having a discussion with your neighbors, people that you would see at a community event or at an arena or at the field, and just expanding on that, really. And what they usually ask is same kind of question you just asked. Well, what are you going to do different, or what do you bring to the table? And I like to say that I'm just here to represent you. My whole job, or the whole job of a county councilman, is to represent the people that are in their area, represent their voters, and bring their voice and make their voice heard in council.
Given that Strathcona County, well, your ward specifically, is a more rural area, what were the early challenges that you had when, like, reaching out and getting your name out there early? Because when you talk about acreages or lakefront cottages or properties of that nature, it seems like a pretty, like, big sprawl. What were some early challenges that you had just even getting your face out there?
Well, you're right. It was a daunting task. I started early because it's a huge area. There's a beautiful variety of areas in Ward 7, specifically in Strathcona County. We have lakes, we have natural areas, we have wetlands, we have big farms, family farms, acreages, rural subdivisions, county estates, or country estates. And there's a big range of people that comes with that. So when I decided to do this, I really just committed to going out there and trying to shake hands, meet, hit every door. And it's a lot of steps, you know, it's a lot of long driveways and a lot of walking in between homes. And it was just a great way for me to A, get in shape by doing this, mm-hmm. and B, just a way to connect with the community and having them see me out there walking around, shaking hands. That was the biggest challenge, I guess, was that big space of distance in between each person, and the fact that everybody out there lives out there because they're trying to get some privacy. They're trying to get away from the city. There's a lot of closed gates, and there's a lot of people that are kind of surprised to see me when I walk up, because not very many people do. But it was rewarding to me when I did see them and they did engage with me, and they were like, well, we haven't seen anybody in years do this. So it really made me feel good that I was bringing that change already just by hitting those doors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you talked to me earlier in the last few weeks about getting the kids in the community and doing bikes and biking around. It's a good opportunity for exercise as well as getting the community engaged and showing that you're trying to keep people involved. So, you know, I'm sure, you know, having kids and stuff is a great way to, like, approach that, approach other families. And it's a great way to level with those other residents in the area. Even for you to say, like, I'm fully aware of the concerns and stuff like that. In your time doing the early door knocking, what was a lot of the concerns, and was that originally, like, the platform that you had, or through door knocking you had to adjust what your fight was?
Well, it was a kind of a symbiotic relationship. When I first started door knocking, I realized that, you know, there's these large distances and I needed some help to go between these places and to spread out the word and hand out pamphlets and hit every door. So I started just getting my kids to do it as a kind of an allowance thing, you know, mm-hmm. come help daddy, go door to door, and you get $5. But they ended up really enjoying it, doing it themselves. They started meeting their friends and their parents' friends that lived out there. And the people, the homeowners really enjoyed having the kids there. I think in some cases more than the adults.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a slew of emails that came in every time I did this. It's so good to see kids involved in this. You know, I don't usually vote in county elections, but I'm totally going to vote now because this young man was here at my door, or this young girl was here at my door. And the kids really are engaged. It's taught in social studies, but not to the extent that maybe it should be, but they were proud to be out there, to be doing something like that. And that all kind of grew together.
Mm-hmm. One question that I don't think that many get asked is, like, is there a way to do this gracefully? And is there another, like, side of it where you see this a lot in Edmonton, where people are breaking the rules with putting signage and this, where is there a balance between doing it gracefully and like jamming it down people's throat? And like, where is that balance for you? You talk about people wanting privacy and stuff like that. So when you're met with that type of resistance, how do you gauge that?
Well, I think because the city has their election at the same time of us, like all the municipalities in Alberta have the same election at the same time, it just prepares people for that. They know what's going to happen. They know there's going to be signs out there. But the good thing about the county is that it's not just on every road. I can't afford 1,000 signs to put out there. So you have to mitigate where they are. And most of that's on the highway and in major throughways. So people kind of expect those to be there. When it comes to social media and things like that, I don't post anything that's a smear or anything like that, anything negative. It's just information about me and what I'm doing. And when I'm door knocking, all I say to people is, you know, I'm just here to introduce myself. I want to meet everybody before the election face to face so you can put a name with a face when the election rolls around. And I think that's a lot better than trying to push myself, if so to speak, on people and try to really kind of drag answers out of them or get emails out of them or try to like make it sound like I'm a telemarketer. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but my style is more like, here, I'm here to meet you. I'm here to shake your hand. I'm here to meet you in person so that, you know, when you think about voting on election day, oh, that guy was here. He's not trying to make me do anything I don't want to do. He's just introducing himself.
Yeah. And what's really funny is you can see people's characteristics come out getting closer to the election, because early on, some people were, this is what I can do, this is what I can do. And then they start to see their name slip down, and then they're like, this is why this guy sucks, and he's doing this, and he's breaking laws. And so it's kind of crazy, because you have to stay graceful throughout the whole thing. And it's probably a really big like sliding scale of like, how much do I give people their privacy and allow people, but how much do I actually try to like get out there and get doing it? And when does this become annoying?
That is the hard part, because I have to kind of go off of my sixth sense or intuition when I walk up to a door. And I was knocking on doors yesterday out in a hamlet called Hastings Lake, and a woman answered the door with a baby, you know, attached to her. And I was, nope, I understand. I was a parent too. I understand. No, just take this and you can contact me anytime. So, you know, even though she was engaged and she wanted to talk to me, I fully understand that she was busy. Mm. All right, if someone's cooking dinner, you know, I can't be obtrusive into their family's, you know, meal times. I only really engage or start doing Q&A and things like that with people that are, you know, wanting to sit with me and actually invite me in and talk about the issues.
No, yeah, that's a really good way of handling it, because you're showing that you're putting them first. And I think that's really huge, because it's probably like you're driving, want to be like, no, let me tell you what I'm going to do. Let me tell you what I want to do. But having that like governance inside to be like, oh, now it's not the right time, but here's the avenue to reach me. You can reach me through email or phone call or social media.
That social media and email and websites and things like that exist is so that they can, I always make sure they take a pamphlet. I mean, I guess if I do anything that's forceful is the wrong word, but insistent, then yeah. It's just, you know, please take this, read it if you can. All my contact info is on there.
Yeah, of course. And going into door knocking, what has the main concerns in this ward have been? Where do you see like the big pinch point for the community? And is it all reasonable?
It's very basic. So when I go out, so just to explain a little bit about the area that we're in, it's mostly rural subdivision and farmland. So Sherwood Park stops, you know, the main population density kind of stops right before my area. There's a couple of high density neighborhoods in there, but not really. So when we're talking about roads, we're talking about cell phone service, we're talking about fire and police services and response times. Those are the basic things that most citizens in any municipality take for granted in a way. You know, you just call 911 and think that there's going to be a fire truck or an ambulance showing up. But it's not always like that out there, because if the response time is too long, that's half an hour or 40 minutes. If your cell phone doesn't work and you're trying to call your spouse or someone because your car broke down or you can't get to work because the snow hasn't been cleared, that whole road is your only access to the city or to any services. So if one of those things isn't functioning properly, it's a major safety concern. So people can really feel cut off. So imagine if you picked up your cell phone and there was just no bars. Mm-hmm. And you were an elderly person, for example, who lives out there on their own or just with a spouse, their kids have moved away, and now you're totally stranded. It's a really, terrifying feeling for people out there. And I think that's universally what the concern is out there. I mean, everyone's always concerned about taxes and how their tax dollars are spent and big projects that are happening. That's almost secondary, I find. But the primary concern as I'm walking around is the roads, the access to their home. Just outside your house here, Ryan, is you have four or five ways that you can get into this neighborhood or get out, to be more specific. There's one. So if that road is in disrepair or it's not functioning properly because of snow or anything else, it's a major problem. If the fire trucks or the service trucks can't get in there, that's a major problem. If the school buses can't get in there, that's a major problem. So really everything that I've heard from people is just basic needs. Like, we need cell phone coverage, we need internet coverage, we need roads, we need fire service, we need police service. And after that, it kind of goes down in levels of importance. Mm-hmm. But all the things that I've heard as I've walked around have been those primary basic concerns.
So when you go into this, like talking about, bridging that gap to hearing the concerns and actually pushing that through, what's like your internal criteria for deciding what needs to be pushed to the front, and how do you prioritize that even as someone sitting on a city council? Because if you're met with two right answers, how do you choose what one takes priority?
Well, it would be, for me personally, it's how much outcry there is. So in county council, we don't have parties. There's no political parties. There's no conservatives, no liberals, anything like that. It's literally the people that you're representing, or the people, your neighbors that you're representing. There is no agenda. So if there's an outcry over a certain road or a certain area that's not got cell phone service, then it's pretty obvious. So it's levels of its triage. So there's a road that a lot of people keep talking about as I campaign around there. And it is obvious to anybody that drives on it. If you don't have a monster truck, you're not getting through that road. It's mm-hmm. in extreme disrepair. So that has to be on the top of the priority list. Get that road fixed so that the water trucks, the fuel trucks, the service trucks, the cars, citizens can get to where they have to go. Because think about it, if we don't have wells most of the time out in Strathcona County, we have cisterns. And if those water trucks can't get in there to fill your cistern, you have no water. Mm-hmm. That's a big problem. So if someone can't get into a road, or if a road is in such disrepair, that has to come first. Then we go down the list from there. And it just depends on living out there and knowing everybody out there as well, I can also judge for myself, okay, this road needs to be a priority because it's obviously in disrepair and people can't get down there. It's the complaints that people, they're flooding in through email and on social media and on Messenger. They're going to tell you. And it's my job to filter those out, triage them, and then make sure that the right things get done in mm-hmm. council.
So when you talk about, say, something, for example, like the road repair, what would be the process of doing that, and how long would it actually take? Like, when you look at, is it getting the approval? Is it getting funding? And what does that pipeline or timeline look like?
Well, it's all of it. And that's where politics comes into this. Every government has an agenda. Every government has a budget. And they can't fix everything all the time. Not every road can be pristine always. I think people are pretty smart for the most part. Most voters are pretty smart. People don't give each other enough credit when it comes to that. People expect that there's going to be a process for this stuff. They know that you have to go through public works. They know that you have to get the financing for it, that there has to be, it's not going to happen right away. For example, if a road is in disrepair, it's going to take weeks or months to get the funding and the approval and they actually get the shovels in the ground. Mm-hmm. So I think people understand that. But the main thing I think that's missing in at least my area of county politics right now is that back and forth. People don't know what's going on. They see a road, it's in disrepair, but there's no one communicating with them about when it's going to get repaired. People understand. If I told you, okay, I hear your concerns, this road is in disrepair, it's going to take 4 months to get shovels in the ground, that's the best I can do, I'm sorry. I think people understand that. They know that these things take time. It's not 10 bucks. This is millions of dollars we're talking about to fix a big, long rural road. And there's a process to this, just like anything else. And I think that nobody expects things to be done overnight, but they want the explanation. It's my job to keep them informed about what's going on, what I'm doing for them, and how long it's going to be until it's addressed.
Do you think, like, when we look at the county as a whole, or the amount of an aging population in that area, of how many people in their 20s and 40s are sitting on acreages, is education a big part of it as well?
Education in like for the kids, like,
talking about politics and understanding how exactly politics works, and making sure people understand the process behind it.
There's a lot of misconception out there about how our county politics works. People are busy, you know. County issues aren't in the headlines of the news very often. They're definitely not covered unless something major is going on out there. So the day-to-day issues really aren't focused on, I guess. And as long as everything's hunky-dory, no one really cares to look or has the time to go into that or do the research. But I feel like there is a little bit of a disconnect. County politics and civic politics in general don't get as much hype as a provincial election or a federal election might. They don't get the money to put towards those elections that federal or provincial politics might. So I feel like there's less coverage means less interest in a way. Do you know, does that make sense?
It's not something that people are really prioritizing. And when you look at people that have farms, they're, you know, maybe barely on their property for a while, or coming in and out, or whatever it is. Where you look at when you look at city politics, there's a lot more people running. So that's a lot of, you know, crossfire in between everywhere. But it's interesting because you're running against a guy that's been there since like 2017. So do you
before that it was 1998, I think, is when he first started.
Yeah. And so when you look at that, was that initially like a challenge for you when you went door knocking? Were people like, oh no, like Glenn Lawrence is like the dude. Like, why do you think you're the dude?
If anything, it's the opposite as I'm seeing it. I mean, Glenn has done a great job up there. He's been a pillar of the community for years, for decades. But after a certain point, people start to turn on you. You know, anybody in government, anyone that's in the public eye, you know, they, you know, the sentiment is, well, what have you done for me lately? Mm-hmm. You know, that's just kind of the way that some people think. And it's more about, I would never take away from what Glenn's done for the community. It's amazing. But
yeah.
And the other side of that coin is it's time for a new perspective.
Right.
You know, it's all the people that were his base, all the people that were his supporters, you know, 20 years ago, aren't there anymore. Mm-hmm. As I walk around, it's like, oh yeah, well, he's been there for a long time. It's time for a change. I get a lot of, I mean, I don't want to, again, I'm not running a smear campaign or anything like that, but there's a lot of hate out there.
And yeah.
He's a target because he's a government official, and whether he's to blame or not, he's getting the blame. So I get a lot of people that are just, without me asking any questions or mentioning it at all, they're like, oh yeah, so you're running to our place, Glenn? And then they're like, well, good. And they go into their rant about what they
did. Right. Like and it's interesting because anything in the public eye, things just organically don't age well. Like some things just don't age well. So whether or not it was a good decision at the time, like some things are out of your control and then they just fall off. And then there's only one person to blame. It's the person at the, you know, so it's no like fault of his, depending on, you know, I don't know much about him, but again, it's some things just don't age well. There we go. Something happened.
Technical difficulties.
Yeah. Probably the dog. When you look at that, what is your like approach been to like criticism? Do you have like a strategy in place of like, this is how I'm gonna like handle criticism? Same way you're triaging what's important and whatnot. Is there like a filtration process to understand what criticism you really need to look at and what criticism is just general like outcry?
I always try to steer it away if that happens. I don't, like I said, I'm not running to on a well, I'm better than him kind of campaign, or it's me versus him. I'm just there to tell you about me, what I'm doing, why I'm doing this, you know, why this is important to me, why this should be important to our community. And then people can make their own determinations from there. And
right.
Whenever that comes up in conversation, I try to steer it away from that. Or, okay, yeah, no, that's the concern that a lot of people have had, but this is what I'm here to do. You know, so I try not to have those conversations, because I feel like it comes off smeary and just negative, you know.
Well, and you're using that person as your base instead of what you're actually going to get done.
But right. I don't want to make it about him. It's about,
right. Exactly. Right?
It's about what I can do. And to go back to your question about, you know, differences, a younger demographic moving in out there, social media, for example, is a big thing. I'm really trying to utilize social media to communicate back and forth with constituents and introduce that as a way that people can communicate with their government officials. I feel like that's really underutilized. It seems like only during an election do politicians really get on there and, you know, encourage communication back and forth and kind of get off their butt and do something.
Mm-hmm.
And that just hasn't existed in Ward 7. Mm-hmm. It's that kind of presence, that kind of communication, that back and forth just hasn't kept up with the time.
Mm-hmm. What kind of learning process was that for you in terms of learning about social media and how to actually use it effectively?
Well, I think, you know, we've had this discussion a couple of times. You've helped me a lot through doing some of this, and I'm not the best social media person in the world, but I know that it's a tool that is extremely important, and it's a conduit for people to talk back and forth, good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
And if I do get elected, it is something that I intend to keep on using, keep my Facebook page active, keep my Instagram active, so that people can get a good back and forth communication going without it being too official and going through official channels. So they feel like they can talk to me, Colin Reed, not counsel through their website or through their email.
And it's also a great way to allow people to stay updated with what you're actually doing on a day-to-day basis. And talking about that, what do you think your like days would look like week by week if you were to get elected? How does that job as a council member actually look in real life?
So everybody has an area they're responsible for. And to me, being, you know, a person that's involved in the community, I plan to just do that as I'm doing and accelerate that more. So when you see me at an arena, when you see me at a field, when you see me at a game with your kids, come up to me. You know, I have this job now. Come up to me, shake my hand, tell me what's going on. And then I can bring that to who needs to hear it, bring that to council. Day to day, it would look like going to the office, going to the county hall, doing the council meetings, doing all the other things that every councilman is expected to do. Everybody has to chair a committee or more.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is expected to go to the conferences and to learn about, you know, all the things that need to happen as far as, you know, the entire municipality goes, the entire province goes. People that might not be aware of this, but in municipal politics, you have a big say in what happens in the province too.
Right.
You're liaisoning with the provincial MLAs and federal MPs, because the only way that they know what's going on is by talking to the lower levels of government and making deals with them and seeing what we can all agree on to make happen and how to best spend government funds. So there's a lot of, I guess I should say, just lunches and office time spent talking to those people. And there's a lot of emails that are going around. So it's like any other job in that way, where you're going to an office, you're answering your emails, you're answering your phone calls, you're dealing with the issues that you have to deal with that day. But then you're going to get the odd citizen or the odd issue that comes up. Hey, Range Road, you know, 220 is a major disc repair. We're having a hard time getting to work. Now I have to go and to bring that issue to council, start the process of getting funding so that that issue or that project can be worked on. Talk to the different people that are involved in that. Then that's where your main part of your job is bringing the money and the people that need to do the work together to get it done. And then communicating back to the people, letting them know, okay, this is what I'm doing, this is where the process is, and this is how long it's going to take to get it done.
When you look at like voting and all that nature, How does that process look like? Is that a structured thing or is that an as-need basis?
What do you mean as-need?
Like when you're, like, is it just as these votes come up or is it a structured, like, on the 15th and the 1st or once every month we're sitting down and we're voting for the month's worth of things that have come in? How does that look like in theory?
It's, well, depends on what time of year it is and things like that. Like summertime, council stands down. I think most government councils stand down. But regularly, there is weekly council meetings that everybody has to attend. There is regular votes that everybody has to attend. It depends on what the issues are and what's going on. But those, there are scheduled meetings, agendas, and council meetings that you have to attend.
Right. Exactly what I was asking for, because I think it's interesting for the audience to know like how that works when people are waiting for answers and people are waiting for decisions to be made, when exactly they could see that timeline in their head of,
well, and every government always, like Edmonton does this too, everything's live streamed, you know. Every council meeting is public knowledge, it's live streamed,
right?
And I would say half your time as a council member, as a city council member, as a county council member are scheduled, so you have these certain things that you're going to do, and the other half would be your community engagement. So you're going out there, you know, to community events, talking to people, you know, letting people know that you're there, letting people know that you're listening. Having them coming up to you is something that I would love if it happened organically all the time. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you might have to go out there and go to a community center meeting and find out, you know, what's going on in that little piece of the ward.
Mm-hmm.
And try to engage with the people purposely and try to draw some answers out of them, try and draw some conversation out of them so that they can feel free to open up to you. So that's the other half of this, is that a lot of that is not scheduled. It's 6:30 in the evening. It's you know, going to a fire hall and talking to the members that are stationed there, finding out what they need, what's going on. And that kind of stuff is on your own. It's on your own accord. You're going out and doing these things so that you can be engaged with your community.
What does that communication look like between other ward, like other city councilors? Is that going to be an early challenge, seeing as you haven't been in office yet? That's not an experience that you have necessarily like done yourself, but where do you see that approach sits with you? And is there certain things that you've tried to have early communication with other members running in order to kind of get that conversation starting now and to open that dialogue for people that are running in other wards? Because I assume that the challenges for your ward aren't going to be the same challenges. So how do you get to council meetings and actually find a level footing for everybody?
Well, it's all about making those alliances, Ryan. You know, you're just like anything else. If you're in an office and you have an IT department, you have an HR department, it's all those stakeholders. And in my current job, that's one of the things I have to do a lot. It's kind of prepared me for this, is balancing what, you know, AHS might need as opposed to what, you know, accounting might need, something like that. So that you always have to make those alliances. And I'm already going out there and trying to meet all the other candidates that are running for county council in Strathcona County. I've met with the public school trustee candidate who's running out there as well, because their job was to liaise between the education board, Alcalan Education or Alcalan School Board and council. So these are all people I'm going to need to know when the time comes. It's whether I've talked to them or not. I also feel like the members of the other rural counties already have a natural alliance that maybe, you know, has to be built up a little bit, but that we'll have a lot of similar issues. We'll have a lot of similar goals. When the time comes, we're going to have to band together so that we can get those votes to pass, because we have 8 council members in Strathcona County and a mayor. So the majority of those people have to vote for something to make it go. Mm-hmm. So if I already have myself and 2 other rural council members, that's 3. Now you have to get 2 more. So making those relationships, and making relationships especially with the people or with the candidates that are running in Sherwood Park in the urban area, that's going to be huge. So that, you know, we can help each other when the time comes to get those votes to pass.
Yeah. To being in a rural area, because it's... you can't really have people that come in that don't actually like live there, because you don't really understand what the needs are. If you haven't felt that pain before, you can't really use that empathy to say, oh yeah, I know what you're going through. And then all of a sudden you're going back to like your urban area, and then these guys can't get, you know, the safety they need or the cell phone coverage. Do you find that's like a big asset that you actually know firsthand?
That is the disconnect between the urban part of Strathcona County, which is Sherwood Park, and in some extents our Drawson and things like that, and the actual rural areas is, you know, we kind of get forgotten sometimes. It's the, oh, there's a bunch of farmers out there. You know, there's, you know, wow, there's not very much people out there. We don't have to worry about that. But that's not the case. There's a lot of people moving out there. These neighborhoods are growing. They're growing. More youthful families are coming out there and taking on these big projects. And living in the rural area and being part of that country kind of lifestyle, we still go to Sherwood Park and use all the services there. That's where the Walmarts are. That's where the grocery stores are. So Sherwood Park is very important to us. You know, we have a great relationship with people in Sherwood Park. Every time we go to a gym or a yoga class, it's in Sherwood Park.
Right.
So we have a lot of relationships there, but sometimes I feel like the opposite is not the same. So we understand the issues of the people in Sherwood Park. We're empathetic to all their concerns. We drive on those roads too. We use those services too. But the reverse is not the same. They're not coming out there and living, you know, or having to deal with or utilize our road systems or feel our pain. And if something's going on, if there's a big snowstorm, people in Sherwood Park can pretty much be guaranteed they're going to be able to get down the road in a few hours. They're going to be out there plowing the roads.
Because Sherwood Park, they would have like an urban plowing plan or whatever it is, where you guys have a priority-based system.
They get more love, definitely. Yeah. It's more population, it's more roads. For us, it's a little bit more, you know, priority based. So, you know, school bus routes, they'll get it first, and then it kind of goes down the list from there. But people don't realize, especially people from Sherwood Park, is that those roads are the only way that people can get in and out of their house, or to any major road, any highway or anything like that. You got to go down one of those ridge roads, and if they're in disrepair or not, you know, properly cleared, you're on your own. People with big trucks are out there pulling people out of the ditch all the time. People are plowing their own subdivisions with their own plow trucks.
Mm-hmm.
So some of that is just the lifestyle that you take on when you live somewhere like that. But some of it is also a disconnect between us and Sherwood Park. We need these things too. In some cases, more than people in Sherwood Park.
Well, and it also seems like once winter hits, all of these existing problems just accelerate to a 10, right? Because it was an issue before. And now once you add a heavy snowfall and not the proper systems in place, it just gets worse.
Well, and you got to think too, like those water trucks are driving up and down those roads every day. People are getting their cisterns filled all the time. And especially people that have horses and livestock, they need their bigger cisterns filled all the time. So those are really heavy vehicles driving down these roads all the time. And they're not always, they get repaired, but it's not a long-term repair. It's a patch.
Mm-hmm.
So they're still going to be in constant states of disrepair. And that kind of short-term thinking, I think, is what we need to change out there. We need these roads as functional as built for the long-term as the ones in Sherwood Park are, because we have more vehicles weight-wise going through there than even some of the roads in Sherwood Park do.
And we talked briefly on, you know, the need for essential services like fire, ambulance, police. Talk to me about the residents in recall or experience with, you know, services like police or RCMP. And I know we kind of talked about this in the last coming weeks about trying to get like full-time firefighters and stuff. Where does that fit on like that priority, and how important is that to start having a conversation about?
So these are two of my major issues. These are two of the major issues facing the rural area of Strathcona County right now. So I don't know how much you know about the layout or the map of Strathcona County, but basically we have out in the rural areas, we have our Drawson, which is I can't even believe how much it's grown in the last just 5 years. Big, you know, million-dollar houses out there, big big communities, big neighborhoods, high-density neighborhoods going in there. And then you have other neighborhoods like that that are kind of peppered throughout the county. And then you have subdivisions that are, you know, probably 20 to 50 acreages all in one subdivision. And if you're talking about a 30-minute response time or a 40-minute response time because you don't have full-time firefighters, everybody has to come from Sherwood Park. That is a, and you know, we've done this training. This is that's an eternity.
Yeah.
That you're on your own. And we've, you know, the climate's also changed a lot in the last little while. And we've had a lot of wildfires out there. It's been dry. It's been hot. Right now, you know, you can look out your window right now and you can see how much of a tinderbox we're kind of sitting in right now. If a wildfire starts out there and there's no fire service to immediately respond to that, you could lose a lot of land, a lot of property, a lot of livestock, a lot of money. And insurance is a big part of that too. People, you know, we have bills, we have property taxes we're paying, but we're also paying home insurance. And that home insurance goes down the lower the response time of an emergency service is, like fire and ambulance.
Right.
So these are all factors that, I mean, Strathcona County has been struggling with for a long time, but that voice is what's lacking, I think, in council. Letting council know, like, no, this is not a sleepy little farm town anymore. This is a major priority. And these are a lot of homes that are going to go up in flames. Or if, you know, you're having a medical issue, firefighters are also paramedics. And that's, those two things go hand in hand in Sherwood Park and Strathcona County. So that response time matters too. If you need an ambulance and they're 20, 30, 40 minutes away, that's a big problem.
And is that the same type of response when you see to people calling for like victims of crime and stuff? Do you see that being an issue as well? Talk about it being a growing population. The more people you have in, the more bad actors you would have, therefore would drive the need to have a larger response, have a shorter response time in order to settle these. And if you have someone breaking into your home and a police officer isn't showing up for...
So we also know this too in our current vocation, officer presence is a big deterrent to crime. So whether you're talking about localized crime like downtown Edmonton or spaced out, just having those officers, you know, patrolling those streets, moving up and down. I mean, I've met all the community peace officers that patrol out there, and there's a growing number of them as the county could afford it, but they could afford more. Mm-hmm. And people take it for granted until they need it. And just knowing that officer is driving up and down that road, is always at a certain place at a certain time, is patrolling around there, is minutes away, that by itself deters crime. That will keep the criminal or the crime of opportunity from being so easy. If you're got driving by and you notice that a farm or an acreage has kind of, you know, not had anybody at it because the people are away on vacation for a month, let's say. And now that's a target because, you know, okay, this place is just unmanned. It's not very much secure. There's no one that can see in there. But there's also a police officer just driving around up and down that range road. Maybe I won't go to that place. Mm-hmm. Maybe I won't try and break into that home because this guy's always here. That's kind of what I'm pushing for, is to get more officers out there, more cars out there, more community engagement, first of all, with that. And to let the people know that this is, your safety is a priority and you're not on your own. You don't have to fend for yourself. You know, you will have somebody coming to help you, as anybody in Sherwood Park, with your property taxes and your taxes that you're paying are going towards this. So you don't have to feel threatened or like you're living in a dangerous place just because you live further away from Sherwood Park.
Mm-hmm. That'd be the idea of, you know, the farther away, the farther I feel like I have to defend my own property because you're just in the middle of nowhere. Question that I have out of curiosity, would, when you talk about fixing things or building things and versus that against raising budgets or hiring new staff, is there a different process surrounding that? Is one faster than the other? I would assume, like, you know, take away the process of hiring and like the criteria and stuff, but actually getting that passed in a voting format, is that kind of easier to argue with? Because there's less tangible things. I don't need to hire contractors. I don't need to shut down roads. I don't need to. Is this an easier sell?
Well, keep in mind that government officials aren't saying, okay, Ryan, you're, you know, in public works, you're in charge of the roads. I'm not giving you orders and telling you, okay, go fix this road or this road. There's a city manager, there's a county manager in there. There's a bureaucracy that's going to get that done. Our job is to get the financing loosened up and the priorities dealt with as, you know, to govern the county. So we're not directing services necessarily. We're just putting the issues out there that are important to people. They're important to our residents and letting council know that this is the issue. We need this done. We need the funding to do it. And my job is to tell council basically what the people out there need and then to go back and forth from there.
Right, right. That makes sense. You guys are almost just like
liaisons between the people and the services.
When you look at your campaign, because you've been doing it for a while now, what are some things that you've learned about the ward or learned about yourself throughout your time campaigning, door knocking, attending events, etc.?
I've been humbled, floored by how happy, community-driven, generally just overall happy people are that live out there. You know, every home I go to, people are, you know, very engaged, very friendly. They're happy to see you there. Nobody is, you know, flooding me with any kind of like hate speech or any kind of, you know, negative, bombarding me with negative things. Like, why isn't this being done and why isn't that being done? There's none of that. It's more that, you know, they're happy to see that somebody cares enough to get out there and that we'll continue to promote that happiness for the next 20 years. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm trying to bring to the table here is I'm trying to convince people or tell people or let people know that, no, I'm not just doing this for 4 years. This isn't my part-time job. This is a full-time 20-year commitment between you and me and council. And I want to be your voice for that 20 years. And it really has given me a sense of accomplishment or, you know, hope that this can actually happen because so many people are like, well, wow, this is great that you're out here. This is great that you're knocking on our door. You know, we feel like we're really far out here. No one really cares about us and you're here. And it makes me feel like this could actually happen. And that I will be their representative one day. And the issues that people bring up are just simple, basic needs of life kind of things. These aren't complicated issues. We're not talking about, creating a massive transit system or a monorail to take people all around the county. These are just simple, basic needs that everybody has, but they just don't feel like they have that voice. And if I can bring that to them and kind of bring a little bit of community and, you know, sit down on their porch with them or on their back deck and have some discussions, it feels great. And it really is an amazing experience. And I never thought it would be that at first. I thought it would be like, oh yeah, thanks, you know, we'll see you. We'll see you later.
Or just complete chaos of like, here's all the issues and you're just getting flooded by like all of this.
Everyone out there has the same issues. It's same right down the board. I haven't had anybody kind of sidetrack me with anything weird or kind of put anything weird out there. Everybody just wants to be heard and they want to know that whoever's represented them in council is going to listen to them and is going to be out there, is going to be their ally.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that you're able to kind of take all this in and direct traffic in that way, it probably makes it a lot easier to bring that forward and articulate it in a way that people actually, A, are able to digest and listen to on the city council level, and B, feel like there's transparency and people are being heard, right? Yeah, you talk about using social media, but you also brought up too, like the idea of reporting back after city council meetings. What would that actually look like?
So just like anything else really that you're talking about to people or having a digital conversation, really. What I'm doing, I think, is extremely important in council. What council does is extremely important. At the civic level, all the things that the municipal government does is the things you use every day, the things that will save your life or make your life more comfortable, your property taxes that you can see coming off your mortgage statement every month, the emergency vehicles driving up and down the road itself. These are all the most basic ground level issues that a politician can deal with.
Almost and like an after action report or something.
So even less in an official way, like just the post that every politician seems to be doing right now in the election year, just keep that going. I don't know why that's such an alien concept. I don't know why that doesn't happen more often, but especially at a county, rural, municipal level like that, I can literally get on, okay, this is what happened in council today. This is what the agenda items that I brought up, because the people in X part of the county, you have voiced concerns about this. We're looking at 3 weeks before we can get shovels in the ground, or before we can do this or this or this. Just people just like to feel involved, I think, and like to feel informed. And they might not want to be informed like minute to minute on a live basis, but 2 months from now, they decide that I wonder whatever happened about, you know, this issue. They can jump on there, scroll back, and see exactly what I did for them.
Mm-hmm. And when you look at it a little bit more introspectively, because I'm interested to know, what is your mindset, or what is your kind of driving motivation in order to keep yourself consistent and making sure you're waking up in the right headspace at the end of the day? Like, is there any day-to-day routines that you have that kind of make sure that you're in that right mindset to lead?
That's a really good question. That's a really good, really good question, actually. I think the best answer would be is that this is something that I really want to do. You know, I really have always wanted to do this, you know, for years and years. And just waking up every day and knowing that this is reality. Come October 20th, this is going to be a reality. Like, we're doing this. So keep myself motivated with that. And even if once I'm elected, I'm going to keep doing that. Like, this is an important job. And I think people lose sight of that with all the rhetoric that goes on and, you know, Republicans versus conservatives versus liberals and all these different, you know, gun buyback programs, everything that's in the news. People forget that their local politicians are out there every day making decisions that affect every single last one of them, whether they want to be involved or not. And that's our job to do it. And I think it's an extremely important job, one of the most important jobs there is. And that knowledge, I think, will continue to drive me for the next 20 years. Like, it is not a joke. It is not, you know, fancy dinners and sitting in hotels and smoking cigars. You know, it's extremely serious, grassroots, ground level job that keeps everybody safe and happy and healthy.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a great answer. And just to wrap this conversation up, I want to start off by saying thank you for coming on. I think the information that you provided, especially giving us education of both the realities of someone living in a rural area and how important it is to factor that in and still allow ourselves to understand that the need for these emergency services and proper roads and priority to these rural areas where residents might not feel that they're getting that same impact they are in an urban area. I think that was really important, and it was really important to have a conversation about that today. But for someone that might not know who you are and might not even be hearing this conversation, and they're only hearing your name on a ballot, what is something that you would want them to know first?
Well, something I would want that everybody to know in a soundbite kind of way is that I've always had jobs where it's been service related. So I'm here to serve. I am not here to accelerate my career or to use this as a stepping stone. I want to represent the people of Ward 7 for the long term. I want to be the voice that they can count on to represent them and to fight for them. I think I have the background that can, you know, the credentials, if you will, to do this job. I've had a variety of different careers. I've done every kind of aspect of service in a lot of different ways. I know we've met all the people out there through the campaigning and through the relationships that we've built. And I would just like people to know that I am committed to helping them and to being that voice. And I think I have the ability and the background to do that.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't doubt that for one second. I think you will provide a very big impact if you are to be elected, when you are to be elected. And here at Spare Bedroom Studios and this show and our channel, We are wishing you the best in your campaign.
I appreciate that.
And we're going to do what we can do to send that message out and make sure that people's voice is being heard from the audience. Maybe some people in Strathcona County that are listening to this episode today, as well as the message that you're sending back. We want to be able to make that clear. And yeah, I can't say enough how grateful we are to have you on here and share that message. And we're leading out of this conversation. Where can people get a hold of you and contact you for any comments, concerns, questions?
So Google's been really good to me. All my social media is right top of Google right now. You type in Colin Reed, Strathcona County, it's going to pop up right away. There's my Facebook, which is Vote Colin Reed. There's my email, VoteColinReed at Hotmail, and my website, which is VoteColinReed.ca. Mm-hmm. So any of those means, DM me on Facebook. I'm usually by my phone all the time to answer any questions anybody has. I usually get back to emails as soon as I get them, unless I'm out of service inside of a school or something like that. And the website, you get my phone number is actually on there. People can call me directly as well if they get in there and they find it on there. And just do your research. I mean, anybody that's going to be a voter in our modern democracy, I mean, the information is readily available. You don't have to go to, you know, the library and research somebody anymore, look through old newspaper articles. There's so much information on all these amazing candidates in both Edmonton and Strathcona County and everywhere else. And please vote. Definitely vote, because these are the elections that matter the most to you and me and everybody else at a personal level. This isn't about, you know, international defense or a budget that's going to, you know, buy submarines or anything like that, that most people will never have access to. This is literally the things that me and you and everybody else deal with on a daily basis and what really should be of a major concern to all of us. So please, whoever you vote for, go out and vote, utilize your advanced voting if you have that in your area, and just cast that ballot, because it does matter, definitely.
Yeah. And with that said, voting is October 20th. I believe advanced polls are October 4th to
6th for us. Yeah.
So October 6th to 11th.
6th to 14th for Strathcona. It 14th. Might be a little bit different.
Right. Between, yeah. But for sure, all citywide elections, as well as Strathcona County, October 20th. Like my guest Colin Reed said, make sure you get out in there and vote. Let's get a big voter turnout. It's important for the outcomes of your community that you live in and the services that you actually feel.
Thank you so much for having me, Ryan. It's been really great.
Of course. And with that, that has been a Solo Spotlight. I'm your host, Ryan McDougall, and we will see you next week.